Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
In this podcast, we talk about Borough's recent unbeaten run, give our praise and place picks, and answer your podcast questions. This is the Borough Breakdown Podcast, and this is all your Borough Matchday chatter in a pod.
Support. Curtis Fleming is there on the edge of the air. Fleming for Craig Hignett. Hit it, Higgy. Higgy hits the treble!
Ravinelli coming alive again. Janino wants the ball played to him. Ravinelli spots out.
Hello and welcome back to the Borough Breakdown Podcast with Tom, Dana and Matt. We are the Borough podcast that gives you all of your matchday chatter in a pod, and Borough have extended their unbeaten run with a 2-0 win against Swansea at the Riverside in what, pre-season charity match, was it called as? I don't think it was. Guys, we've got a nice win to talk about this week. As usual, going to start out with one key takeout. Dana, I'm going to come to you first. What's your one key takeout from the Swansea game?
Honestly, I feel really strange about Borough at the moment. I think that there's the acknowledgement that we are still in the mix for sixth place, because let's be honest, it's Norwich that we're eyeing up. But it's very precarious in that I think one defeat knocks that off the table. I was really annoyed when Norwich themselves beat Ipswich, because firstly, I thought Ipswich would win. I didn't realise that Norwich had such a good record. I think they've beaten Ipswich in the last 15 years or something like that. So I was annoyed that they couldn't win Ipswich, because that would have really helped our cause. But then it didn't really matter anyway, because then Coventry beat Leeds, Hull beat Cardiff as well. So the teams that were above us before the game are still above us. But we did our job in the end, and that's what we had to do. But it's just a very strange, it's that kind of the hope that kills your cliche that's just dangling down there, that playoff carrot. Will we reach out to grab it, or will it be swept from our grasp? We don't know. We'll have to see. But it's, yeah, I think it's a very strange feeling because of that. It's encompassing that will we, won't we? So ultimately, we'll have to see. But yeah, we're still in there. We've given ourselves a good shot at it, given our unbeaten run and the continuation of that with that result yesterday against Swansea. So that's good. But yeah, we'll see where it lands us at the end of the season.
It's all we can do, isn't it? Focus on winning our games, and whatever happens. Mm-hmm. Just, I think we'd all written it off a few weeks ago. So just enjoy the ride, as it were. Matt, what's your one key takeout?
It's kind of similar. It's weird because I think the run we're on and the results we've had, it shouldn't be understated how good of a run this has been. I'm sure I saw a stat that said if we go unbeaten against Hull, or if we avoid defeat, it either equals or it exceeds Michael Carrick's longest unbeaten run as Middlesbrough manager. And I just thought this unbeaten run, it doesn't feel like there's no hype around the club at the minute that sort of represents that run. I feel like we are in good form, playing really well. Individuals are playing really well. We've got a striker who is playing as good as he has done in a Borough shirt, and we are still in the playoff mix, but it doesn't feel like that at the same time. Like, there were moments in the game yesterday where it just felt so flat, and I understand Luke Williams' comments about it feeling like a pre-season friendly might rub fans up the wrong way. But I'll be honest, there were times in the second half, especially where I was sat there thinking, like, this does feel like a pre-season game. It felt like two teams who literally were both mid-table, had nothing to play for, and just were not really bothered and just were looking ahead to next season. But Borough still have the incentive to hang on in there. And it just didn't feel like it was a do-or-die situation. It didn't feel like there was pressure or tension there. It was weird. But delighted for the win, delighted for Lath, delighted for another clean sheet for Super Senny. And I guess we just need to look forward to the next few games and see what happens. Obviously, one bad result will knock us out, but let's just see how long we can hang in there for.
I just want to add on to the end of that, thinking about the question that Gokul asked last week of, like, what's the reason for this turnaround? I did waffle a bit with that answer, but I think what I was trying to get at is that it doesn't feel like it's been a turnaround, even though it has been. I think because of certain circumstances, like the nuance of the games that we've played some really crap teams, let's be honest, like some really poorly performing sides. And then we've got our luck along the way. We obviously had our misfortune with the force injury. I think taking it all into one and generalizing it, I think you've hit the nail on the head there, Matt. It just doesn't feel like it. So yeah, it's very, very strange at the moment, because I think we all know that one defeat does burst our bubble a little bit. So yeah, I echo your thoughts there.
Well, let's dig a little deeper into the game yesterday. Borough obviously get a 2-0 win against Swansea, courtesy of two goals from Emmanuel Latella. Dana, how would you assess the performance against Swansea?
Oh, I tell you what, it was a game very low on quality, not just from Borough, not just from Swansea, from both sides. And I must admit, I just sat there a bit dumbfounded at multiple points during the game because I just thought, how is this so bad of a watch? And when I say it was a bad watch, it was incredibly tough. Obviously the wind impacted it. I don't think we can get away from that. For people that weren't at the game yesterday that aren't on Teesside, the wind is very cutting at the moment, and there were very aggressive bursts of wind every now and again. Like one of them took the cap straight off the head of the guy in front of me, which was quite a point of humor, I must admit, in the first half. But it was very aggressive at times, and I think you could see with balls played in from the right and the left going straight out of play for goal kicks. There were passes being made that went straight out of play for throw-ins. There was one in front of me, Lewis O'Brien, in the second half, and he reacted really frustratingly to that. But there were a lot of frustrating moments during the game, actually, where the quality just wasn't there. And I wouldn't even say it wasn't quite there. It just wasn't there at all. It was, as far as wins go, a very bad performing one, and dare I say quite boring as well. And I don't think you'd really attribute boring to a 2-0 victory. You'd usually attribute it to a 0-0 draw, but it was quite boring, and the atmosphere reflected that. Like, I always feel like the atmosphere and the game goes hand in hand. Like, if the game is good, the atmosphere is usually, it follows suit, it reflects it. And the game was crap and the atmosphere was crap. So it's one of those games that I'm going to remember, but I'll remember it because of how bad it was, basically. Like, it was crap.
Well, just following on from your answer there, Dana, I'd like to thank the aggressive gust of wind for my new cap that I got from the Riverside yesterday. I didn't realise it came from your side of the stadium, but... I definitely agree with what you said, though, because, as I mentioned last week, I was in hospitality for this game. I was there with my girlfriend, who's not a big football fan, although her cousin was an ex-footballer. She's a rugby fan, and the last time we were in hospitality was when we beat Reading 5-0. So I was kind of hoping for a similar game, just be like a good advert for the game, and just be like, oh, see, this is what you're missing out on from watching rugby. And I've sat there like literally like that for the entirety of the first half. And I mean, we scored just before the end of the first half, and I was going in with something to be happy about at halftime. But yeah, most of the first half, I was just sat there like, I can't believe, firstly, how quick this game's going, because, you know, although it's been quite boring and short of quality, it does seem to be passing quite quickly. But then also, there's just been nothing to get excited about, and it was such like a polar opposite game to that Reading game. But Matt, I want to get your thoughts on the game yesterday. What's your assessment of the performance?
I completely agree with Dana. It was a really black game. Like you say, no quality whatsoever. And I think the second half especially felt like a non-event it just felt like it was petering out into 1-0, and Swansea were really, really poor. But I still did wonder, you know, if we don't sort ourselves out or pick up the pace or have an injection of life into our performance, there was every chance I could just see them, you know, hitting us with a sucker blow from absolutely nowhere. So I can't lie, I was absolutely delighted when Latilaf's goal went in, because I was getting a little bit concerned that we were just allowing the game to drift a little bit and allowing potentially an open door for Swansea to sneak in and get an equaliser. And I thought they didn't deserve anything from the game. So I'm relieved that we got the 3 points, but it was very much a very poor game. I think lit up by maybe individuals having some good moments here and there, but I wouldn't say overall as a team performance it was anything special. And I think obviously, you know, Latilaf lit the game up individually with two really good goals. And I think he deserves all the credit for making this game even remotely memorable, because quite honestly, if it was a 0-0 or had Swansea nicked, you know, a late sucker blow and beat us 1-0, that performance would have probably come under quite a bit of criticism, you know, as a boring, dull, lackluster game. And luckily it spares the blushes of the performance, because we've come out with a win, and a win's a win. We can't complain about that. But I think Dana made a good point about it being a bad win. Like, there's no such thing as a bad win, but it's as dull as wins get, but you'll take it. So I would like to see our performance levels, you know, increase massively from that. But a win is a win, and you've only got to beat what's in front of you. And quite frankly, what was in front of us yesterday was quite a poor side. So you just take it, don't you?
Did you see that moment in the first half where I think it was Isaiah Jones was grappling with Nathan Wood, and then his top kind of half comes off and he's defending with like his head hole
like a crop top.
Yeah, it was a crop top, and you could see like his sports bra and everything. And as he was like retrieving the ball, he managed to put his head hole back through his head. I thought that was, it's little things like that, little moments like that, that were like, oh, that happened. That was of note. And like, even in the first half, my dad was like, oh, look at those seats up there. Look at that guy on his own, like very top of the West Stand. I'm like, Jesus, that just sums up how bad this game is. And apparently BBC Tees were talking about books, and Maddo lent Curtis Fleming a book in 1998 and he hasn't seen it since. Like, little things like that. That's how you can tell that a game is really, really dull.
What do you expect from a charity game? if you could all sum up the game in one word, what would that one word be?
Shite. Honestly, to channel my dad, I ask him what he thinks of the Borough game all the time, and that is the only word that he says. Shite. So that's what I'm going to say.
I'll just... Matt? Meh. It happened. It was a game that happened. Will I remember it? Probably not. Meh.
You'll probably remember it a lot better than I do, Matt, to be totally honest with you. So
you were already 10 points in by the second goal going in.
All I know is the red team beat the white team. So see, one of the main factors of the red team beating the white team was Emmanuel Latilaf. He scored his 12th goal of the season in all competitions. He's averaging a goal every 166 minutes this season. Another really positive display from him. Do we think he's maybe hitting top form at the moment?
Yeah, I would say so, yeah. I mean, I watched the highlights back this morning, the extending ones, and the commentators said as much. And yeah, Latilaf has been a really positive signing for us. And I will say, people do like to bash the recruitment team and like, whatever, that's you do you kind of thing. But they deserve immense credit, firstly for spotting him, and secondly, Michael Carrick deserves credit for, I guess, harnessing or helping him to really adapt to English football. As I've said before, he's got some really nice attributes that can be improved upon. The fact that he's got them in the first place, the agility, his aerial ability, his pace, his movement, it's all really, really good. The first goal, actually, I thought it was a bit of a shit goal, but actually it's a pretty smart finish from him. Firstly, he creates it himself by nipping in there ahead of Matt Grimes. He manages to work it a little bit further into the box, then he shoots back across goal and he tucks it into the very near corner of the opposing side to what I expected him to go to, and I think that's really clever from him. And then the second one is so pro clubs, it's insane. It was like me on FIFA 21, fake shot, cut inside, curl it in. Really, really like that goal. And he is a really promising player. because I think that he can even get better from this. And for him to have 12 goals this season is really, really good. As you said, they're averaging a goal every 165 minutes in all competitions, 66 in the league, I think. It might be the other way around. But that's really good from him. And I'm really happy with his season this season.
Yeah, I'd agree. And just to kind of give a little bit more credit to what you were saying in terms of the scouting department and the people who brought him in, realistically, who had heard of him last season? I know I hadn't. Mm. Like, I like to think I know a decent amount of players in our price range just from playing Football Manager. I imagine like listeners might be the same from that, or playing FIFA or something like that. Never heard of Ladell Laff, but he is exactly the profile that we were trying to replace up front. And then to get 12 goals in all competitions as well, like realistically, if he ends the season now and gets a few more in the games that are remaining and ends the season with like 15 goals, what a return that is for a striker that you've brought in his first season in English football and to come out with a return like that. When we've signed some players in the Championship who have been absolutely dreadful, probably paid a lot more than Ladell Laff as well, and we probably paid more for them, and they've got nowhere near that sort of return and fit nowhere near as well into the team. So I think just to kind of pile on with the credit there, well done to the scouting team for finding Ladell Laff. Another signing from, well, January loan signing I want to talk about, the scouting team will have had a lot of input into, was Luke Ayling. Matt, he put in another positive display. What have you liked from him as late?
I just feel like he's been really, really solid. I think he's really good defensively, put some fantastic tackles in, but I also love that he's not afraid to overlap and bust a gut to get forward. And especially now we've gone back to a back four as well. I know when we moved to a back five, it seemed like that was a good change to maybe suit him. And I was reviewing the loan signings and I thought, okay, maybe Luke Ayling fits more into a back three or a back five than he does a back four. And I thought, well, if we go back to a back four, and I've said the word back quite a lot in that sentence, if we go back to a back four next season, I didn't quite see where he fit. And it was for that reason alone I thought, yeah, I can't see Luke Ayling signing for Borough next season. I just don't see that happening. But recently, his performances have been fantastic. He's really consistent. I feel like he's a solid performer. You can hang your hat on him more often than not. And I'm really glad that he's performing well at right back once again. And it has altered my opinion, which was of, out of the four loan signings, Lewis O'Brien was the only one who I would make an argument for signing on next season. But honestly, in the last few weeks, I would say I've U-turned on Luke Ayling and I would be open to bringing him in. I still would like maybe a more younger, more dynamic right back, looking ahead to the future a little bit. Obviously, we don't want Rav playing there ideally. I think Dyke Steele will leave. You then got Tommy Smith and Luke Ayling as your two right backs. I would like some, you know, fresh blood there. But what he offers the squad, what I think he offers as a character, and just his shithousery, I think Borough definitely have space for that, have room for that in our squad. I think there's definitely more attributes he can bring on the pitch, off the pitch, his attitude, his mentality. So I'm delighted for him. He's a really likable character, and I will admit I've U-turned on him. And if Borough were to go ahead and bring him in again next season, I wouldn't be against it.
I think I'm starting to feel the same way. I'm not entirely completed that U-turn just yet, but it is something I'm considering more and more. I think something you've just mentioned there, having a younger right back sign with an eye on the future, I think that's the direction I prefer us to go. But if we're kind of making a push next season, maybe we do need someone with the past experience of Luke Ayling, but also the ability to kind of help us through that. Dana, what's your thoughts? He's out of contract in the summer. Would you like to see him stay on a permanent deal?
Personally, no. Fully acknowledging that he's done well and he's been a reliable option in the kind of short term since January. But for the reasons that both of you have touched on, we have Tommy Smith at the moment, who's 31. If we were to bring in Luke Ayling on a permanent deal, 32, you're probably then looking for another right back anyway within the next like 2 to 3 seasons. So why not get one now? Why not get one now and allow time for them to develop through time, but also through games and playing matches. So I think with Luke Ayling, it's an appreciation, an acknowledgement of what he's done, but then a kind of moving on period. It is very interesting, though, that I think, Matt, you mentioned him, Anthony Dykesdale has not got back into the team. Nothing screams you're leaving in the summer more than Anthony Dykesdale coming on with like 5 minutes left to play and playing right wing. Like, the writing is very much on the wall with him. He's not obviously not managed to get back into the team. I just don't think he's been performing well this season when we have seen him. So yeah, there's obviously an option there, or an opening there, should I say, for Luke Ayling to come back. But for me, I would probably look for somebody else. Lasse Sorensen of Lincoln is a really good player, a really good right-sided player, who's also played in midfield, very attacking, creative option there. If we want another Dane on the right-hand side, as well as a Dane on the left-hand side, then, you know, Lasse Sorensen, I think, would be a really good pickup. But that's just a suggestion thrown out there. But to answer your question, I think happy with what Luke Ayling's done overall in Borussia, but I would prefer a different option for me.
I think he's a nice to have, isn't he? He's not a need. Mm. He's not a, you know, we desperately need this next season. I think it's an if we can, if we've got space, funds, whatever, he'd be a nice to have, I guess.
Yeah, I completely understand the points from both of you, and I think it's just going to be interesting to see what Borough do when we reach the summer. For the next question, I'm going to go with kind of open floor question, and I'm going to acknowledge before I ask it, this is going to be a difficult one to answer, especially not having the benefit of hindsight, which would be the easiest way to kind of answer this. But Borough's form at the moment, we're unbeaten in 7, 5 wins, 4 clean sheets, and Borough are now top of the Championship form table over the last 6 games. Some people are saying that form's come too late. Actually, has it come at the perfect time? I think we see it quite a lot where towards the end of a Championship season, there's always a team that seems to come out of nowhere and makes a push and either sneaks into the playoffs or they'll finish like 7th and have the momentum going into next year. What's your thoughts at the moment on Borough's form? I've seen we mentioned earlier there's still the carrot of the playoffs there.
I think it's so difficult. I think we've got 3 really big games that I think will be our undoing. I think it's fantastic that we've gotten to this point. And if we'd have just had them 3 games, Hull, Ipswich and Leeds, and we'd just had them 3 and we had Swansea, Sheffield Wednesday and Blackburn coming up, or whatever our last 3 games have been, if we'd flip them around, I'd look at our remaining games and go, it's the right time. You know, we've hit form at the right time. We've got a bunch of games coming up where I think we're going to win. And I could see a clear path to disrupt in the top 6. But we've beaten teams we should be beating. And we've not done that enough this season. This is, I guess, the wins against Swansea, Sheffield Wednesday, they are, and the point against Southampton, which was the 3rd game I was referring to, they're games we should be beating. That should be the standard. I still think Hull, Ipswich and Leeds will be our undoing. I mean, essentially, we have to come out of them 3 games and we still have to be the same gap. We have to keep the gap 6 points to Norwich to have any sort of a chance. And even then, goal difference, I think, will play a big part. So we need to somehow maintain this gap and not let it grow any bigger than it is already while playing them 3 teams. And I just can't see it. So I think momentum-wise, confidence-wise, it's great, but I still think we've got too much to do. And yeah, unfortunately, I think we will know in the next 2 or 3 games that our fate's going to be that we will finish short, unfortunately. So it's a shame. But I mean, if we do come out the next 3, 9 points or something crazy, then there's an argument we deserve to be there. So it's a big period coming up and it's a tough one to answer.
I love how some people might be listening to this and they'll just be like, why are they talking about the playoffs so much? You know, just kind of enjoy it for what it is right now and the unbeaten run and stuff. But whilst it's there, like, if you're not dreaming in a delusional sort of way, then why are you a football fan? Like, this is the sort of thing that we love. We love to just look at Fotomob or Sky Sports website and see a Norwich winning, a Coventry losing, like things like that. We absolutely love it. But there was one thing that Isaiah Jones mentioned on Monday, on Easter Monday, that it's better to be the hunter than the hunted. Now, personally, I'd much rather be the hunted because you've got the points on board, but it's a little interesting nugget, isn't it? That the motivation of, yeah, that carrot, as we've discussed, the proverbial carrot just being there. You know, I think footballers have motivation anyway, but just that extra incentive that, hang on, there's a chance here. It seemed like our season was pretty much petering out, that we were rolling out the towels on the beach at one point. And the fact that we have given ourselves a chance still is really good. And whilst that is still within our grasp, it's just that extra little bit of motivation. So I don't know, is it better to be the hunter rather than the hunted? I'm not so sure.
I think it depends on what your form's like. We were actually having a conversation, me and some of my work colleagues who were in the box yesterday, about this scenario, and saying that last year we probably went into the playoffs in the wrong sort of mentality, in the wrong sort of form, because we'd clearly dropped off towards the end of the season, and then it was a big ask to really pick up that performance in the playoffs, I think. And we were the hunted at that point, even though we had the points on the board to clinch the playoffs. There were still teams who would be thinking, right, if we can finish fifth or sixth or wherever, then the form Borough were on, we could probably take them. And that ended up being the case with Coventry. So I think Isaiah Jones does have a point in that if we continue this form, and that's a big if because we've got some tough games coming up, if we continue this form and things go our way and somehow we make it into the playoffs, we're the ones going into it with the momentum. And then you look at who we could potentially be playing, and it could be Leicester if they fall off enough. It could be Southampton. Both teams haven't necessarily been on the best form recently. I would actually be quietly confident if we somehow managed to get sixth and played Leicester in third, having beaten them twice this season. I mean, it doesn't really mean anything. We beat Norwich twice in the playoff season.
I was just going to say that, yeah. I was thinking that.
Well, it would give you something to kind of hang on to in the playoffs. And I think at the moment, what you were saying there, Dana, about why people might be listening to this and why we're talking about playoffs, I'm just kind of like, would you rather it was just all done and dusted and we're talking about nothing? And
exactly.
It's just where in mid-table would we be finishing? Like, we're still mathematically in with a shot, even though there was a graphic on Sky Sports yesterday after the Norwich Ipswich game, which was talking about percentages, and Borough weren't even on that, and I think Hull had like 3%. So, you know, it's very unlikely, but what a story it'd be if it happened.
We've got a tough run, to be fair. We've got the toughest run of the chasing pack. In our remaining opponents, the average PPG is 1.66. Next four opponents' average PPG is 1.73. To compare, remaining opponents of Hull are averaging 1.47 PPG, Coventry 1.57 PPG, and Norwich 1.36. So, yeah, Borough have the toughest run based on the remaining opponents' points per game. So, and I mean, we don't really need the PPG to know that, do we? We just simply look at the teams that we've got coming up, and it's very, very difficult. I fear that all of this playoff talk will be made immediately redundant by Wednesday night. But fingers crossed we do get a good result, a win against Hull, because that's what we need. I even think a draw isn't good enough, but I suppose it depends on results elsewhere.
I think a draw would probably put a stop to both teams' talks of playoffs if that happens on Wednesday. So I feel like both teams are probably going to be out to win that one. We're obviously mentioning playoffs a lot here, and it kind of leads perfectly onto the next question. I'm going to go open floor with it again. Michael Carrick surely deserves a lot of credit for having Borough just even in, you know, the conversation of the playoffs at this point, despite all the unavailability that we've had to deal with this season.
Yeah, I think undoubtedly he deserves so much credit. I remember on BBC Two yesterday, Maddo was talking quite passionately about how he thinks Michael Carrick's the right man for the job. And I couldn't echo that anymore. Honestly, I think something we were talking about earlier in the pod, it springs a point to my head, which was when we were talking about Lattie Lath and how he's improved as a player. I think as well as that, Michael Carrick's ability to improve players is something that maybe gets forgotten. I think we saw with Morgan Rogers, we've seen it with a number of players. We've got the ability to make players better at Borough, and that's only going to make the project and the squad we've got now and the whole thing seem even more exciting. But to think that we've had so many injuries, we've had two really bad spells. You know, the start of the season was really bad. It looked like we were just, we couldn't buy a win, couldn't buy a clean sheet. We were bottom of the league. You're thinking, oh my God, how are we going to turn this around? We back it up with, was it a 6-game winning run or something like that? And then again, we hit a really bad run and you think, you ask him the question again, can Michael Carrick do it? Can he change? Can we get back to basics? And he's proven again, you know, he's been tested twice this season and he's bounced back both times. And for a young coach to do that is fantastic. Obviously, last season, maybe the perception of him was skewed because he was just so good so quickly, so early on. Any inevitable drop-off was going to maybe worry fans a little bit too much, but he's proven this season how good he can be, you know, bouncing back from adversity and his ability to improve players as well. I think it's amazing. So he's done such a good job and I can only, my appetite is only whetted more by the thought of what he could do with a fantastic squad at his disposal next season, if fully fit. I think we're in a really good place with him and yeah, he deserves immeasurable credit.
Yeah, I echo that massively. I wrote in my Flabby to the Moon article that I'm surprised he hasn't gone grey or has not been thinning yet in his hair, because the amount of crap that he's had to deal with unavailability, injuries, Asia Cup, suspensions, players being ineligible against their parent clubs, like it's a pretty spectacular season for that. So the fact that we are on here talking at length about the playoffs and not just to kind of, oh, we could get there, but we probably won't. And I mean, to be fair, that's kind of the thought that I have anyway, but the fact that we're discussing it in depth and looking at these ranging possibilities and hoping that teams drop off because we can take advantage of that is massive credit to Carrick. I think he's a manager that we've seen it last season and, you know, he's got a lot to offer and I think he's a very promising coach. He's had to endure some really difficult spells this season in terms of people kind of pointing at him and picking him apart and saying, well, he's not. He's too stubborn at times. I think he's completely dispelled that because we've seen him switch system. Yeah, he's been leveled some really weird stuff, like he's not animated enough. So he's been subject to a lot of criticism this season, which I guess some of it is deserved. One of the ones was his kind of inactivity, his passiveness within games to switch things up. But I think we've seen him improve with that as well. I still think it could be improved further because I do still think he leans on the side of maybe trusting the players on the pitch a little bit too much. But all in all, it's been a learning season for him, but he deserves massive, massive credit, you know, for us to be in this position, especially given the amount of injuries and unavailability that we've had to endure.
Well, given the amount of credit and praise that we've just given to Michael Carrick, I think it's time that we move on to the Brazen Place. Ah, yes, the praise and place where we give praise to things. I'm not even going to try and replicate what Johnny does. I had far too many Guinnesses yesterday to try and do that. But
praise the Guinness.
I would, but it caused me to not remember a lot of the game, so I'm not praising that too
that's,
much.
That's the reason. That is literally the reason to praise the Guinness.
Yeah, it did probably is, to be fair. I do want to kick off the praise and place, though, by praising a couple of Borough fans who I think deserve it. Yusuf has been nominated for EFL Supporter of the Season. I don't even think there's another Borough fan who could even question, you know, why Yusuf's been nominated for this. The amount of miles he puts in to support his team, and you know, he's always the liveliest person in the South Stands. So really hope he wins that. The winners are going to be announced on Sunday, 14th of April. So from everyone here at the Borough Breakdown, good luck, Yusuf. And secondly, I want to praise one of our actual Telegram contributors, one of the followers of the podcast, Jez Dunn. So a little while ago, and you might have seen this on social, but Jez actually had a book published, which I've got here, The Amateur. The book kind of really answers the question of what would happen if someone playing Football Manager got recruited into an actual football club. as manager and what kind of happens in that scenario. Jez sent myself, Dana and Johnny all a copy of the book. I will say as well, I'm not that much of a fiction reader, but I was determined to give this book a go. And within two or three chapters, I was really kind of hooked. So for all our listeners and viewers, I'd definitely say give it a chance if you can. And obviously, well done to Jez in writing the book and publishing it and selling it. Dana, anyone you would like to put in the praise and place this week?
I would like to mention Latte Lath. Obviously, we've kind of already touched upon him. A really good positive signing for us this season. Took the two goals really, really well. And I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up on... Well, he's on 12 now, isn't he, in all competitions. I'm going to say Latte Lath will end this season on either 16 or 17. There'll be some fuckery somewhere, like he'll get injured and, like, I don't know, the wind will blow him over and then he'll be out for about 2 weeks. But I think that he'll end the season nearly on 20 goals, which is really good. I'd also like to praise Johnny Howson, because I think I have to. He's been moved back into defence, needs must. And whenever Johnny Howson has played there, I have really liked him. I remember in previous episodes, ages and ages ago, this was probably under maybe Tony Pulis, I honestly can't remember, maybe Woodgate as well, where he was playing right back and I really enjoyed him there, and I actually preferred him there to central midfield. So I really want to praise Johnny Howson, because I know he had that error against Southampton, which was really costly and avoidable, and he'll know that himself, but he's such a good player at still. Like, you think about Johnny Howson's career and how long he's been playing football for, and the level that he's still playing at is really, really good. And I have never been 100% like hot on Howson, but I'm hot on Howson. He's get that on a t-shirt, T-side Tom. He's been very good recently, and I like his performances in defence. Admittedly, it's going to be a massive test. The game's coming up if he's still in defence, but let's see. I have faith that he could be decent for us in that position, even against tough opposition.
Let's see if we can make Hot on House and the new Horny for Warning. Matt, who is in your praise and place this week?
I've got two. Firstly, Latte Lath goes without saying. Obviously took both his goals, fantastic. Both had elements of composure, which is one area of his game which I think can improve the most. I think he's good at everything in a sense, but they're the areas we'd like to see him improve on. And the first goal, he didn't snatch at it. He took the ball down. He waited. Timed his strike well, placed it beautifully. Second goal, of course, made a great run. Cut back, sat the defender on his arse, and then picked his spot again. Two very good finishes. Very composed, which, you know, we were chatting last week, weren't we, about how we think he's better instinctively, but they were two very good finishes from him. And the second is Tom's new best friend, who he was in hospitality with, is Matt Clark. Tom's new Bezzy. I was thinking about this yesterday, and I was sort of looking ahead to next season, and I was kind of picturing the spine of the side and who's maybe nailed down a place in that best Borough 11 for next season. And honestly, Matt Clark, I think, has nailed down that spot at left centre back. And obviously, Dana was just talking about Johnny Howson, when we've got fit, you know, centre backs and the lightness of the midfield next season. He absolutely, if he signs, will be put back in midfield. And I was thinking, you know, we've got Rav Vandenberg potentially, Dale Fry and Daryl Lenihan, and only one of them three, I think, gets in the side because Matt Clark is there. I think he's a shoo-in, and he's been amazing at left centre-back. And I do wonder, out of them three other centre-backs, who gets in at right centre-back? Who are the two that are going to be left out? We've got four really good options there, given they're all here next season, and that in itself is a really... really positive thing. But yeah, for me, Matt Clark's also been outstanding. Tom, I hope you pass that message on to him next time you're in hospitality. but yeah, he's amazing. He's nailed down a place in the side for me. And I think, given his injuries, as we've mentioned, it's quite remarkable what he's done this season.
I think I was too in awe to actually say anything to him yesterday. That and a little bit too drunk. But with that in mind, let's move on to podcast questions. Fire! First podcast question this week, I'm going to ask you both, comes in from Charles. He said, how easily do you think it would be to replace Senny Dieng if he goes? There are reports this week suggesting he's of interest in Newcastle, Crystal Palace, Ipswich and Sevilla. Matt, I'm going to start with you on this one because
Ipswich,
I know
and Sevilla. Sorry, I'm just laughing at Ipswich and Sevilla. Two very different teams there.
I don't know what you're talking about. Ipswich are the second coming of Barcelona, if you know, you believe their fan from earlier this season. But Matt, I know you're president of the Senny Dieng fan club. What is your what your thoughts on how easy it might be to replace Senny Dieng?
Well, as I wipe the tears from my eyes, my heart says it would be impossible, and I don't quite know how I will recover from said thing, especially if it goes to them buggers up north. I was going to say something else. I'll keep it PG, them lot up the road. But my head, my sensible head, being a logistical Borough fan, I think we could replace Dieng, and I do completely understand that if we were to be offered 5 million for him, you know, that's a fantastic fee, and I do think we could replace, you know, him to an extent. I think shot stopping, you know, there are times where Senny maybe comes out to catch a cross and maybe fumbles it, but I think shot stopping is very good. On the ball, he's absolutely fantastic. I do think we could not replace him quite to his standard, but we could get close enough, and that would do, I think. But of course, it would absolutely break my heart to see him go. And he's another player I think will only get better next season. So I do kind of want to see Senny between the sticks again next season. So, yeah, I just hope these reports are absolute rubbish. And this is a completely hypothetical question we can forget about in a few weeks' time. And we can move on now, because I'm getting upset again.
Yeah, I really don't want to go see him go and sit on Newcastle's bench either. Dana, what's your thoughts on this?
Well, I'm giggling because Matt sounds like me when Tav left for Bournemouth. But yeah, I don't know if it would be difficult, because there's an interesting switch with goalkeepers over the last, I want to say, decade or so, where a lot of them will like to play with the ball at their feet. I think the one goalkeeper that I think of the most with that is Manuel Neuer of Bayern. So I think gradually, since he's obviously been a staple at Bayern, that we've seen regens of him. But I think we're seeing goalkeepers that are a little bit more ball playing, and Dieng is kind of one of those, in that I think he's good with the ball at his feet and particularly good at passing as well. And we've seen that last season as well with Stefan. He was of the same ilk, that he would also play with the ball at his feet. He's not the type that's just going to hoof the ball forward. Although with Dieng, I think he does have the ability to mix it up. With Stefan, it seemed like it was more to do with either that mid-ball to Ryan Giles, or pass it along the floor to one of the centre-halves and let them kind of distribute the ball. But there are goalkeepers out there without shadow of a doubt. It's just that I don't know, firstly, who they are off the top of my head. Maybe Mike Cooper of Plymouth is potentially one of those. And secondly, I don't know how easily obtainable they are. So, yeah, I don't think that it's going to happen anyway. So, yeah, I think this is going to be one of those questions that kind of comes and goes and we don't fret about it too much.
I really hope you're right there, Dana. Next question comes in from Rob. Matt, I'm going to come to you for this one. He said, how can we develop as an attacking unit for next season?
I think the quality and the availability of some of our best attacking players is a big one. I believe in Carrick's philosophy, and I believe in his style of play. I think arguably maybe we need to be a little bit more dynamic. Maybe we need to be a little bit more quicker and incisive at times. I do think our attacking play at times this season has slowed down a little bit. It's been quite monotonous. It's been a little bit, I don't think boring is the right word, but I don't think we've been as sharp as we have been. So I think maybe just picking up the intensity of our attacking play would help, because we were absolutely electric last season. We would slice through teams, you know, and there was nothing they could do to stop us. But equally, I think we have been massively hindered by just the inconsistent lack of a striker up front. I think bringing in another striker would be useful. Let's not forget, we are still one of the most creative sides in the league in terms of the number of chances we're creating. We are up there again for the number of big chances missed. So just by converting them and having a little bit more quality in that attacking third, I think would make some of their numbers change drastically and would hopefully convert them to goals and points. So I don't think we're a million miles away. I think we just need a little bit more quality and a consistent attacking line with players who aren't getting injured every other week. So I don't think we're a million miles away. I don't know what you guys think to that, but I think quality and consistent players in the team would go a long way.
Something I'd be interested in seeing, just based off what you mentioned there, I'd really be interested in seeing how much more effective Lotte Laff has become at taking chances later in the season compared to earlier in the season. Because I do remember that, I think it was the game against QPR at home where it seemed like he missed about 5 one-on-ones and Begovic just had his number that day. But it does seem like he's getting a lot more effective at taking chances now. And I do wonder if maybe that adaption to English football has happened over the course of the season, and he's maybe just gotten a little bit more clinical as the season's gone on. Here's the subject of the next question as well, which I'm going to come to you for, Dana. Comes in from Jake. He says, now that Lotte Laff is starting to show what he can do, is striker no longer the priority position to address in the summer? If so, what is?
I don't know. It's always been one of those players, one of those positions, sorry, where has it been a need? See, I tend to just throw out the word need without really thinking about it. That's what a therapist has said for me to stop doing that. But yeah, I think it's been one of those positions where you look at it and you think, okay, Lotte Laff and Coburn. And because we don't have Rodgers anymore or Crooks, it's become more of a necessity, I would say, just because of depth. But if you do look at our depth chart and you visualize it, the position that I think we need to strengthen more than that is central midfield. Because if you take out McNair, who's out of contract, and to be fair, he's never really been an option in midfield under Carrick anyway, and then O'Brien, who is obviously on loan, there's no saying that he's going to stay and that he's going to be here on a permanent next season. And you've got House and Hackney and Barlasser. And even with Hackney, there's potentially question marks over whether he will stay. Well, he's going to be a subject of interest elsewhere, and then House's contract situation. So I think definitely central midfield is one to look at with that kind of side eye, of, you know what, we need options there. And I think the type of midfielder is going to be pretty interesting as well. I think somebody, if Hackney goes, Hackney's a decent blend of someone that can carry the ball. He's not the most incisive with his passing, like Barlasser can be, for example, or Finazaz further up the field can be. But I think we need somebody who's combative like a House and also really technically good as well, that they can bring the ball out, they can carry the ball, maybe bring in a few fouls. Basically, we just need Lewis O'Brien is that foul magnet, picks up a lot of fouls because of how agile and jinky he is on the ball. And I'm looking at squad depth and thinking there's central midfield there that I think we need to improve upon purely based on numbers, and then right back as well. I think them two positions are pretty important, but I'm still not disregarding striker. I do still believe that we need extra quality there as well. And previously I've said as well, left wing, I don't think Silvera quite does it for me. And then you've got Gilbert there as well, who's kind of a bit of an interesting one, not quite in the first team picture fully. He's kind of on the periphery in a really weird space between that and obscurity, really, because he's not in the under-21s either. So yeah, priority maybe not, mostly because I think there's quite a few positions that need strengthening, mostly in terms of depth in the summer.
Yeah, I'd agree. I mean, I think striker is one in terms of depth. I think we've seen it at points this season where, you know, Lotte Laff's been injured, Force has still been playing out wide, and then we've ended up with, you know, whoever else up front. I can't even think of an
Silvera
example at the moment. But Silvera, for example, or like Greenwood's. I think we do need more out-and-out strikers. I would say ideally three for that position, if we're playing with one striker, or maybe one who can play that and number 10, like we had with Akpom. But I'd say centre midfield probably is the priority position going into next season. Last question comes in from Liv, and I'm going to give this one to both of you. She says, question for the pod. Are you guys seeing much from Azaz? As for me, I expected better, but I'm not seeing an awful lot. Dana, I'll come to you first.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Yeah, I think with him, I'm seeing bits, but it's mostly him being frustrated at his own passes. I think we saw that a lot yesterday where he was trying to slip that ball through and behind between the centre-backs and it didn't quite come off. Now, he did pull it off on Monday against Sheffield Wednesday, to be fair to him, but it didn't count as an assist because Latte Lath missed the target he blazed over. So there are times where it does come off, but I think he's one of those players where he's going to try to play those balls and they're not going to come off a lot of the time, but I like the fact that he keeps trying. I kind of agree that I'm not seeing what I expected. Well, not that what I expected of him, because I knew that there was going to be a period where he's going to kind of gradually ease into things and time is probably going to be his best friend here. But yeah, he's been one of those figures in the team right now where I'm seeing him build, but I'm not seeing him be kind of front and center of the team as I think he can be and is capable of being.
Yeah, I got asked this question a lot yesterday, mostly because I sit next to her at the game. she was asking me this very question. She'll probably ask me it once I go down for my tea as well. I really like Finn Azaz, and I've just got a lot of confidence that he will come good. And I think we're in that natural space or period to which we just have to give him time. And I do believe with time he will come good. I think we've seen evidence with numerous players. We've mentioned it already. They improve under Michael Carrick. I think the idea that a player is going to just join Borough and hit the ground running day one is just something that's not going to happen very often anymore due to the nature of players we sign. The fact that we are at Borough is essentially a step up for them. So they're just naturally going to need time to get up to the standard of playing with better players, maybe playing a more intense style, or just playing at a higher quality in a higher quality team. So I think Azaz just needs time to get up to that standard. And when he does, I think he could be a huge, huge player for us. And yeah, it'll hopefully happen for him next season. But I've got a lot of faith that Azaz will come good eventually.
I'm certainly hoping that he can make a contribution in the next game. And with that in mind, let's move on to preview for Hull City. Before we start, though, I've got a trivia question for you. So get your whiteboards, pens, papers,
old
envelopes at the wedding, at the ready, sorry.
at the wedding?
Yeah, I don't know where that came from.
Where that came from?
Tom's got one in mind.
I think I've just read it somewhere, but trivia question for Hull. Everyone at home, if you're playing along, we're about to start now. Borough won 1-0 against Hull City in the promotion season with David Nugent scoring a winner. What was the exact minute that David Nugent scored in? Time starts now. It's fun being on the other side of that this time and just seeing everyone's faces just waiting for the time at the end, because it's usually
the cogs in our brains working.
Matt, as you were the one I noticed finished quickest there, what is your answer for this question?
I've gone 91st minute. There's something in the back of my head telling me that it wasn't quite stoppage time. I don't know why, but I do remember that game being one where we were knocked on the door and we were banging it down, and it was a case of, we need 3 points. Are we going to get them? And then he glanced that header in from an Adoma cross, it might have been. One of the best, honestly, the limbs that day were unreal. But I'm going to say it crept just inside and was in the 91st minute.
Dinner?
I've gone 82nd. And
yeah.
I'm not sure. I'm trying to visualise the little Sky Sports scoreboard and the time. I can't remember it being in stoppage time, but also I've got a horrendous memory, so I might be wrong. But yeah, I feel like it was 82nd, but I'm not sure.
Well, I can tell you that one of you was absolutely spot on, and now I can tell you that that was Matt. It was the 91st minute.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Mandela effect.
Congratulations on your Borough Breakdown trivia win, Matt.
Thank you very much, Tom. Do I win a prize or do I get anything from you? No,
just prize, really.
That's enough coming from you, that. Don't mind, it's fine. Yeah.
Moving on to looking ahead at the whole game. Just want to kind of quickly ask you both, what's the first thing that comes to your mind when you think of Hull away?
I've got one.
Go on, Matt.
It's the promotion 4-2 defeat. In fact, it popped up on my Facebook memories, I think, the other day. We might not be far off when that game happened in the Premier League season, actually. But I remember going to that game and Borough were in a position where it was literally a bit like where we are now with this game. It's like win or bust. And I remember we took the lead. I don't know if it was a scuff cross and Negredo like slid in from a tight angle and buried it in the corner. And as Borough often did that season, they give you the hope, thinking, right, maybe it's on, the great escape's on. And we found a way of losing 4-2, conceding 4-2 aside, who I think went down with us that season. Typical of just how diabolical the second half of that season was. So sadly, it's not a good memory. It was of that 4-2 defeat in the Premier League.
Exact same one for me as well, Matt. It was that one. And then the very next one was when Scott McDonald scored a hat-trick in, God, when was that? 2011, I think. But the very first one...
That was also 4-2, wasn't it?
It might have been. I don't know. I think I've told this story before, but the reason I remember this is because me, my dad, my mum and my sister were somewhere, and I can't remember where we were, but my dad reverse-parked straight into a bollard. So that's the reason why I remember that. It was on the day of that game. So great old peak div parking. But the first one that comes to my head, unfortunately, is that 4-2 defeat in the Premier League season, in which Jim's husband randomly appeared. I think Borough, it was Steve Agnew then, wasn't it? Remembered that Jim's husband existed and played him. And I don't think we saw him again.
I don't think so either.
No,
I don't remember him sticking around when Gary Monk was manager.
No, he just, Grandpa Simpson there as Jim's husband. He spent so long trying to dislodge George Friend. He got his Premier League debut and then I can't remember him ever playing another game for us. He might have done, but I erased it from my memory. So yeah, that's the first memory that comes to my head in regards to Hull and Borough.
I think mine's the 4-2 win. I think it was 4-2. Time ago now, but yeah, yeah. Scott McDonald, and I remember Maxi Haas playing that game. An absolute blast from the past that was. Looking ahead to Wednesday's game, we've got a voice note from Ant from Hull and Back to give us a whole perspective on Wednesday's game.
Hi guys, yeah, so I'm from the Hull and Back podcast here. Yeah, our season's been a bit, I don't know, it's strange because I see it in two different bits. So pre-January with the squad we had, we wanted to see progression last season. Obviously 15 players finished, we wanted to be, you know, maybe top 10, within the question of the top 6 kind of thing, but we'd have taken 10th place. The position we're currently in right now, absolutely would have snapped your hands off it at the beginning of the season. Post-January, however, after the, you know, the signings we made, the ambition we showed, the positivity, the place we found ourselves in, it's been a bit underwhelming since January. I know that we've desperately missed Liam Delap, like he's been absolutely key to the way we play, and his injury has really thrown us off, but, you know, signing players like Ryan Giles, Fabio Cavallio, these players can win games, and it just hasn't seemed to have clicked for us, you know. Yeah, so a little bit frustrating in that sense, but still positive mainly, of course. Like, obviously, we're in the top 10. We're still within touching distance of the playoffs. It's unlikely, but we've still got, obviously, a chance of them. But, there are a small section question in Rosinia now, and I think it's more or less down to the style of play and the stubbornness of it. Like, we've got the players that can play a fast, incisive, 1-2-touch kind of play. And we insist on obviously quite being, you know, more rather pedestrian and a bit slow in possession and not really asking enough questions of teams, especially the ones we should beat at home, like your Swansea's, your Birmingham's, your Stokes, where we've accrued 1 point from 3 games at home. We just struggle to break teams down, and when we get in the final third, those decision making, that sort of know-how and how to attack and score goals just isn't there. But sometimes it's just too slow, and we need urgency, high intensity, and we don't get it. But obviously he's brand new to management, so he's going to get there. It will get better, and I think 90% of the fan base are still fairly confident in him and are wanting him here next season anyway. So, I'm expecting a tough game against Middlesbrough. You're in form, I believe. Seven unbeaten. Is that 5 wins, 2 draws? But hearing stuff like that is good for us because we prefer teams to be in form. Like we thought we were going to have a tough game against Cardiff. But when a side's doing well, it favours us because you're going to come and you're going to attack, you're going to try and win the game, and that's how we prefer to play. You know, rather than trying to break a side down, we want you to come at us and attack us, and we can exploit that space on the counter attack. So I'm expecting a good game, a tough match, but an end to end one. And I'm thinking I'm going to go for a rather optimistic 2-1 Hull City win. Cheers, guys.
Thanks for that, Ant. I think we're all hoping for an end-to-end entertaining game as well, just not the scoreline you've said there. In terms of the scorelines we want, I'm going to come to predictions now. Matt, what's your prediction for the game?
I've just got a feeling we're not going to get the result either team wants, and I think both teams in trying to win it will end up cancelling one another out, and I'll go for a 1-1 draw. I think it'll just be one of them games where, yeah, both sides come out of it a little bit disappointed.
Dana?
I'm going to go 2-1 Hull. I just can't. That's all I can say, really. I can just see a Hull defeat kind of bursting that balloon of Boris. So, yeah, unfortunately, I hope I'm wrong, but 2-1 to Hull.
I don't know why I'm going to go optimistic here, but I'm going to say 3-2 Boris. Like I say, I am hoping for an end-to-end game, and fingers crossed we'll get that if it is end-to-end, because like I said earlier, both teams realistically need the win to have any hope of still getting playoffs. Hopefully it's a goal-filled game. Cue the 1-0 win either way. But that was it for this week. Thanks for joining me, guys, and to our listeners and viewers, thanks for tuning in. This has been the Borough Breakdown podcast, and that was all your match day chatter in a pod. Up the Borough Breakdown.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.